Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. We are glad you are with us, both myself and my co-host here. We are financial advisors. You know, it's funny. We start the show off every week like that. And I kind of wonder if a listener, a financial advisor, oh, God.
Enough.
Got a real estate agent, financial advisor.
What else? What else? Well, we've been doing this show for 23 years. Pretty low key, pretty open. We take your calls. You can ask us anything you want. Yeah. It's pretty transparent.
And we're practicing financial advisors. So highly certified opinionated. Financial planner, chartered financial consultant. While we don't have that many clients today like we did at one point in time, we still are active, very much active in the business and active with clients and with Client Solutions. We're heavily involved with that. We have many meetings throughout the week of helping figure out financial planning strategies and keeping up to date on all the changes that are going on. And, you know, it's interesting because our goal at Hanson McLean, and really our goal with this radio program, is to provide some education, not because everyone wants to become super educated in this space, but we believe if people have a basic understanding of what is going on in some of the financial markets and products and financial planning, they'll make better choices for themselves, better decisions for themselves, and will make decisions that will not have a negative impact on their lives.
Yes. And if before you invest in something, you should try to at least understand the basic premise of the investment itself.
And
the risk associated. And in a financial plan, you should understand the inputs and the outputs in a financial plan as to what causes, everything's going to be okay is not a financial plan. That is not a plan. That's a strategy. It's not a plan.
And here's the irony. What I learned, we've been doing this a long time, right? So I was starting this industry in 1990. And when someone would come in and I'd sit and chat with them, they're going to be retiring next year, and they weren't worried at all.
If they're not worried at all,
I would be worried.
Right? Yes.
And sure enough, when I start looking at their financial situation, usually some holes there. When someone would come in, they were both really worried. Oh, yeah, we're going to be retiring in the next year. And I don't know, we're concerned about our money and concerned. Before I even looked at the financial stuff,
they're normally okay.
Those are the ones that's the irony of it.
They're normally okay.
But you know, most of the people we work with, it's like they've been saving most of their lives. They're nearing retirement. They want to make sure that they can maintain their lifestyle throughout their retirement.
But Scott, so it's people save, right?
For a variety of reasons, frankly.
But they save.
Some people save.
Well, the clients, mostly the ones that we see, have participated in their 401k over the years and years and
taking
years.
Taking some ownership of their lives.
Yes. But it's normally in their 50s when the kids are either in high school or into college, where they actually then step back for a minute and then start doing a major assessment as to what is the retirement date, if any. For most people, well, there is a retirement
date. And here's what's interesting. So I'm 52. How old are you, Pat?
55.
Okay. So we are right in that kind of zone of a lot of the clients that come and see us now.
Exactly.
And we have a lot of peers. And here's what I've noticed is, you know, family, oftentimes, not to be sexist, but oftentimes it's the wife who scales back on the career to help out when the kids are younger.
That is
right.
That's
pretty common. Kids get into high school and particularly college, and a lot of these families are now like, we got retirement coming down and college. Let's get serious about our finances now. Oftentimes, the spouse that was staying home or part-time home is now fully engaged in the workplace, focused on their career.
Or partly engaged in the workplace.
Yep. And a lot of times it's kind of crunch time for people. It's like, we better get serious about retirement. And it's not so much, well, if we talk to people, it's not so much, for a lot of people, it's not that I hate my job, I can't wait to quit working, but they know that...
anything can happen. The job can change. The location can change. Their health can change.
And they've seen all that. As we've seen this in our 50s, we've seen it with our peers. For years, I would see it with others. Now I see it with...
my friends. Like, correct. Yes. Yeah.
And roughly half of us, one out of two of us, are going to retire before we'd planned because of a health issue or a change in job. Those are the main factors.
Yeah.
As you,
it happens all the time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we want you to move to Pittsburgh.
I sat next to a guy on the plane last week, and he had worked at the same company 41 years, loved it. So he was 63, 64, never planned on retiring. I loved the job, loved the job. They asked me to move to Los Angeles. And because my job was moving to Los Angeles. He said, didn't want to retire, but that was it. Done. Finished.
He didn't want to move to Los Angeles. Gee, that's weird. You know, such low cost of living. Yeah. And there's open spaces to roam.
Yeah. And he's a big outdoorsman. He's like, yeah, I can't do that. That's. And so fortunately, he had planned for retirement. He told me, yeah, I'd been planning for retirement and I was ready. But. You know, circumstances change. So what we try to do is help people get ready for that.
Yes. And to help them as they're in the process of transitioning, we've helped thousands of people cross that fence.
Yeah.
And we understand the pitfalls and we understand.
Cross the fence. Scott, you are the king of the mixed metaphor.
I'm saying that. That
it's cross
sense.
The divide. Okay. Cross the canyon. Climb the fence would be the. You're the king of the mixed metaphor. I can't remember a time you pulled a metaphor off correctly.
I don't know what that is about. It's simply my mind is wired.
That's crazy. So if you go to our website, handsome.
I'm
going to
tell a quick personal story. Because
okay.
Some of my friends tease me sometimes that I'm a bit of an airhead. Just like some things that just...
Well, actually, you're highly intelligent, but you're not always 100% in the moment.
So my son had a semester abroad in Switzerland.
Okay.
A while back. And my wife and I went to visit him. And the day we were supposed to meet him at lunch someplace, right? So we arranged for the place to meet, and we're sitting there.
In Switzerland?
In Switzerland. At the restaurant, I'm supposed to be meeting my 20-year-old son.
Okay.
And so, some man, young man walks by me, and he's wearing a shirt that says Sunnyside, which is a famous restaurant in Lake Tahoe. And I said to my wife, look at that. Isn't that interesting? There's some guy wearing a Sunnyside shirt.
Oh, no.
Jeez, that's our son who we're sitting there waiting for.
Will you just...
I don't know. Really? That's what happens in my metaphors as well. I don't understand it.
Scott, don't share that with anyone else. Okay. Certainly don't do that on the radio.
Just every once in a while, you know, you get a mirror into your own self.
Oh, like, you've worked with me for 25.
I think I'm a reasonably intelligent guy. I don't know if stuff like that happens to me.
Well, you've worked with me 25 plus years, and you can lose me right in the middle of a conversation when it just goes off the tracks, man.
Sometimes right in the middle of the radio program.
That happens.
Anyway, we've certainly helped a lot of people transition into retirement. We come here every week with this radio program to help you make wise choices with your money. Not so you can be the wealthiest guy in your neighborhood necessarily in retirement, but so you can have some dignity throughout your retirement years. So you have some protections as you get age and have some financial resources to make some choices, have some freedom in your life. So if you'd like to be part of the program, we're going to hit the calls here. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to join us. Let's talk with Eric. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. How you guys doing?
Excellent. How you doing, Eric?
Good. Well, first of all, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I'm one of those guys that try to listen to you guys every weekend. But my question,
you know, if you
is,
can't get us, if you can't listen to us live, you can always get our podcast. You can sign up for it; gets delivered each week right to your mobile device or your computer or whatever. But anyway.
Okay. Well, great. Maybe I'll do that next time. So my question, my wife and I, we have, each have 400,000, insurance policy, term insurance policy.
Okay.
And we were looking to, you know, to buy some more insurance, and, we were presented with, an insurance called, Index Universal Life.
Okay.
With a long-term care rider. We also was offered a second to die policy. One of our child, he's got special needs.
Okay.
So we just, you know, before we, you know, we pushed the button and we jumped on this insurance, we just, and I've heard you guys in the past talk about, you know, keep insurance separate and keep investments separate. So I just kind of want to know, what do you think?
How old are you? How old are you, Eric?
I am 48.
And how old is your wife?
She is 51.
Okay. And do you both work outside of the home?
Yes, we both do.
And what's approximate family income?
Approximate family income is about a little over 200.
Okay. And do you both participate in pension plans or 401ks at your work?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Are you either one of you employed by state or county, federal?
Yes, we both are.
Okay. You maximizing your 401ks?
We put about $50,000 a year away.
Okay.
Wow.
For the two of us.
And then are you able to contribute to a Roth IRA?
You know, we started years ago. We did it for about a year, 2 years, and then we stopped because we weren't getting any benefit from it. Our accountant said, we couldn't write up anything because of our income.
Yeah.
No, the Roth IRA.
Yeah, so the Roth IRA, what happens is you don't get a deduction for it. It grows tax deferred and it comes out tax free.
Because you probably can qualify. Considering you're putting this much into your retirement plans, I think you can qualify.
So
for the,
let's talk about your special needs child. How old is your special needs child?
He is 14.
And is he on Social Security right now?
No, he's only 14, so he doesn't qualify yet.
Right. And
if he was of age, would he qualify for a form of disability? Will he be unable to hold a job?
I would think so, yes.
Okay.
So part of your concern here is making sure you've got some assets to take care of him probably indefinitely, it sounds like. Is that correct?
Yes. That's some of our.
So from a long-term planning standpoint, you and your wife would want to make sure that you've got some sort of savings set aside. And if you both died early, have a special needs trust that would be established at that time, which you can do through some estate planning.
Yes.
And the second to die policy.
I actually,
for the rest of the listeners, that what that does, it doesn't pay when the first person dies, but when the second person passes away, that's when a death benefit's necessary.
So here's that. I don't like the index universal life, but Scott, I'm right. So.
Is the second to die policy also a universal life, or is it a term policy?
It's second to die policy. He said it's going to be tied into the universal policy.
Yes. So here's why I would actually consider it with you. You guys have got, it sounds like, the rest of your financial house is in order, right?
Okay.
You both have pensions that are either going to come from the state or county.
You wouldn't recommend him buying an equity index universal life.
I didn't say that. I said I would actually explore the possibility of purchasing a second to die. The one that they're presenting is not the question, right? So I'd look at your pension situation, and both of you will retire fairly well with your pensions.
Yeah, we're going to be okay.
Okay. And you're putting money into your 401k or 457, whatever it is.
Saving 25% of their income.
Yeah, you guys are doing really well.
How old are your other kids?
I've got one in second year in college, and then the one that's 12 years old.
So I wouldn't start with the product in mind. I'd actually start with the attorney in mind and develop a special needs trust.
Are you looking for more life insurance for this specific reason?
Well, we have it's $400,000 on each of me and my wife. Is that enough?
Now, if you're each making about $100,000 a year, then probably not.
Yeah, that's what.
And so there's two things to think about. Your 20-year-old's got a couple more years. They're going to be hopefully self-supportive, right?
Yes.
After a couple years. And your 12-year-old, you've got another 10 years or so. The big issue you guys have, obviously, is your 14-year-old. How much do you have in savings right now, your retirement accounts, all that sort of thing?
Retirement accounts, everything put together is 1.2.
And how long have you worked for the state or county?
I bought the 5 years.
There you go.
I've now here. I'm 17 years with the 5 years.
And your spouse?
She's almost 20 years.
Okay. So and you have a special needs trust already.
Yes.
So the question is.
And they already have over $1 million in savings. if you bought any, here's what I, if I were in your situation, I got to tell you, if I were in your situation, I would not be buying an equity index life insurance policy.
Well, that's number one.
And you would not either.
That is
right?
Correct. That's off the table.
But I certainly might consider buying a second to die term policy. Look, if you continue to your planning right and you retire another 10 or 15 years from now, you'll have the money set aside to fund a special needs trust when you both pass away. It's just you're concerned about if you both died today. But if you both buy today, there's $2 million there.
You can fund the special needs. I think that how I would do this is I would increase both your life insurance probably to $1 million.
Term.
Absolutely. Because the term is all you really need. You've got a lot of years left to work.
And another 10 years from now when you're fully vested on your pension and that sort of thing, it's a different story.
It's a different story. So I would just increase the term. I wouldn't buy anything else other than term life insurance for you. But I kind of like
increase the term. Okay.
Yeah, just increase the term to probably $1 million each. It's probably going to be cheaper to increase to buy term than two individual term policies than it is to buy a second to die term. Yeah, I don't even know how much they would a second to die term would cost.
I mean, a lot of the cost of insurance is just the underwriting process, the commissions they pay to whatever the distribution channel is, the fact they got to keep you on the books. I mean, over half the money doesn't get paid out in death benefits to begin with.
So I would go there. And I think that financially, if you stay on the path, you're going to have more than enough money to fund the special needs trust.
Yeah, you're saving $50,000 a year.
You guys are incredible.
And I would, if you want to save some, look at the fact that this person didn't recommend that you contribute to the Roth IRA is surprising to me because the Roth IRA, you can invest in anything you'd like. The benefit of it, all the growth comes out tax-free. And I'm sure the life insurance agent was telling you the great things about this life insurance policy. He said the money grows tax-deferred, and then you can pull it out tax-free during retirement. No taxable income. Is that what he said?
That's exactly what he said.
Okay. But the fact is you could take advantage of the Roth IRA without any insurance costs and have tax-free withdrawals.
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't always suspect the person that leads with product. Which is probably why you called the show.
That's the one main reason.
Yeah, I would increase the term insurance. And you're doing a great job. You have done a phenomenal job saving for retirement. And are you an engineer by chance?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I bet he works for like Caltrans or bridges. I hope you work on the bridges in the state of California.
Yeah, we need guys like him. Yeah,
we need more
get
people
those
like
bolts
you.
Done correctly.
Anyway, appreciate the call.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
It's always good to hear people planning. And it's boy, I tell you, it's an extra challenge. I've got a sister who has two special needs children, one who will never work, and just the kind of planning you need to do around that is creates a burden that most families don't have to face, but clearly a lot of families do.
Let's head now to Denver, Colorado. 1-888-2-HANSON. Love to take your call as well. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're talking with Will. Will, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Will. How can we help you?
So I recently decided to sell my house in Seattle. I decided the market was strong enough for me out there to take some gains. And at the same time, I moved to Denver, a different market, also growing. And I took the windfall from my house in Seattle, paid off all my debt, and was left over with a nice, low six-figure sum of money, which is almost enough to be a down payment for a house in the Denver area.
Okay.
And I was curious on your guys' suggestions on how to grow that, to take $100,000 and turn it into $150,000. And I'm a little nervous about putting it in the stock market just because I feel that the market is at the tippy top and we're at the end of a bull run, and I don't know how to not buy high and sell low.
Yeah.
when do you plan on using this money? So you said you want to grow it for the down payment of a house in Denver. Is that correct?
Yes.
And when do you plan on buying a house in Denver?
Oh, let's say a year or two.
Okay. So let's talk about how these dollars should be invested. Yeah.
So, Will, if you said these dollars we're not going to spend for another 10, 15, 20 years, would say, look, who cares what the price of the stock market is really right now? Because statistically, it's going to be much higher 10, 15, 20 years from now, right? So I mean, when I started in this industry in 1990, the Dow was around, it was either 2 or 3,000. And all the ups and downs we've had that time, and of course, here's where it's at today. So we know over the long period of time, it's going to grow. When we have a year or two, well, now it's anyone's guess. I would be just as nervous as you are about investing in the stock market if I needed my money a year or two.
In fact, I would highly recommend against investing anything that has any sort of principal fluctuation whatsoever.
If you need it within a year or two.
If you need it within a year or two, right? Because you're talking about a market cycle. And we don't know whether we're long into this bull market or not. We know the bull market is, on a historical basis, has been long. What we don't know, right, is when it will come to an end or what that will look like. Because they all come to an end differently.
That's right.
And they all come to an end at different times.
They grow again from there.
So it's how many, it's the length of time through the market cycles. And you don't have the year and a half to 2 years.
It's not
a length of time for a market cycle.
Yeah, and the average bear market, by the way, lasts about 9 months. So it's about a 9 month slow, but some are much quicker and some are much longer. So you can't, like, there's, unfortunately, you can't say, oh, wait a minute, here's the start of one. Let me get on the sidelines and wait till the 9 months has passed and get back in. It doesn't work that way because they're all look so different.
So in this particular situation, I would buy.
I'd look for the high.
I'd look for a high yield.
High yield savings.
Savings. I wouldn't even put it in a CD.
No, because you might find the right house in 6 months.
Yeah, you might find that the market, you know, in Denver slows down and that you want to buy a house, or you might just come across. So I would actually go to bankrate.com.
Yep.
And I would just say high yield money market account.
Some FDIC.
Yeah. And it'll end up at some, you know, bank somewhere. But as long as it's FDIC insured, you don't care what the name of it. It could call Billy Bob's Bank and you wouldn't care as long as it's FDIC. So that's what you want to look for.
And if you've got more than, it's 250, if you're an individual account holder joint, you get 500,000 of coverage.
Or if it's inside of a trust, it's
based on the number of beneficiaries
and the number of owners of the trust, not to exceed 8.
Right. So what if, let's say I extended my timeline out to 3, 4, 5 years.
Still wouldn't do it.
I still wouldn't do it.
Because you don't know what the timeline
is. Let's say it's 100,000. And you know that for $100,000 you could make, you know, buy such and such house or whatever, and you go to it's 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you find this great house, good deal on the house, and the $100,000 is worth $80,000.
And you say,
I mean, that's a real possibility.
Or it could be worth $120,000. The problem is we don't know, and you don't know when you're going to buy a house. I don't. Are you trying to wait through the market cycle? Obviously, you waited in Seattle for what you thought was the top of, or at least closer to the top of the market to sell the house. Mm-hmm. Are you waiting in Denver for the home prices to drop?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the same reason that you wouldn't invest in the equities market.
And they might occur together.
Yeah. And they could occur next week. You don't know whether it's 3 years or 4 years or 5 years. If you knew when it was going to happen, you wouldn't actually have to worry about having enough money for a down payment. Right. You'd be rich as stinking.
Nobody knows.
No one knows. So what you're doing is you're just kind of...
And by the way, the people that called correctly the last market downturn 10 years ago, I mean, if you just go and look who those people up, they all made a series of disastrous calls since then.
Since then?
Yeah, betting on gold and all kinds of other things.
Yeah. So in your situation, high yield money
high
market
yield
with FDIC insurance on it.
Yep.
All righty. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. And hopefully you can get a... And you went from one hot real estate market to another hot real estate market.
Yes.
It's probably cheaper in Denver, though, than I would in Seattle, my guess would be.
For parts of Denver, depending upon. But Denver and Seattle, both great towns.
I could not live in Seattle. I'd love to live in Denver. I could not live in Seattle.
Just because of the weather?
I've always thought if I didn't live, I live in the foothills outside of Sacramento. And I've always thought if I didn't live there, I could live in Denver. Parts of Denver I really like a lot.
My son lives in Denver.
Seattle rains too much. It drives me crazy.
Loves Denver.
And my oldest daughter's in Denver as well.
Yeah, does she like it there?
Loves it. Are you kidding me? She loves it.
Yeah, but outdoorsy, person, right?
Yeah, she's out hiking or running all the time, or goofing off somewhere.
She should have started hunting, though.
Hunting? Yeah. What's he killing?
He's gonna deer hunting. I don't. You didn't get that from me.
I know. I'm trying to picture Pat hunting.
I didn't get that from me.
Pat would probably be in tears watching the deer die. Pat likes to portray this kind of tough guy, but he's got a big soft
heart. Like the poor deer.
Well, that is about all the time we have in this first half hour. But again, if you want to join our show, want to call us, call the number and schedule a time to.
Yeah, even if you can't, we take calls during the show and we take calls after the show as well.
So. Yeah, and oftentimes we'll schedule times during the week.
Make it easy for you.
That sort of thing. So 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We're taking a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Hanson McLean.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking with us on this program, whether you listen to it live when it's broadcast, or you listen to it on podcast. We are glad you are participating with
us. Yeah, these podcast things are really catching on. No. Here's what it is.
Interesting.
Well, because I'm now getting like emails or texts with links to podcasts from friends that up until 3 months ago.
I do sometimes. I listen to something really. I sent you one.
You sent me one this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my son.
On decisions. It was found fascinating, particularly one of the, I think it was a TED talk.
But even.
TED radio hour.
Series. I mean, my son sent me one. My daughter sent me one. Like, try this. My son sent me a short one. It was about 5 minutes long. And then he said, "Hey, Dad, I want your opinion on this guy's philosophy. Do you think it's valid?"
Here's the challenge I have. We're going to get back to the financial stuff in just a moment here at Hanson McLean. Here's the hard part I have as a middle-aged consumer.
Okay.
The amount of options out there, both in podcasts as well as television. And I don't even... There are times when I don't even know where to start.
Well, that's why the referrals of the podcasters.
that's how I found most of the stuff I listen
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So.
And by the way, some of my favorite, Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell, who's brilliant.
Excellent.
Revisionist History, I think.
Slow Burn,
which has been fascinating.
it's fascinating. I don't know. I listened to the show.
In the TED Radio Hour, one out of 10 and really is really interesting to me. Not all, but number one podcast, Joe Rogan, the one who Elon Musk was smoking pot on his program. I find him a little crass, but he has some interesting guests sometimes.
Yeah.
But some of the podcasts are so long. It's this long format. They sit down and have a conversation. It's all free flow. There's very little editing and they're 2 hours and I don't want to invest 2 hours of my life.
Yeah. And you're thinking, where is this going?
Sometimes nowhere.
Yeah.
1-888-2-HANSON to join our program. If you'd like to join us with questions regarding anything in your financial life, frankly, we'd love to take your call. And even if you want to be anonymous about it, make up your different name. We don't care. So to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Denver with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Really appreciate it. My question revolves around long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. I bought into a packet policy about 10 years ago. I'm in a busy anesthesia practice out here in Denver, and I'm basically a little less than halfway through paying for this policy. It's one that actually pays out right away for just the course of 1 year, just to myself. And my question involves, should I actually continue to pay on this thing. I'm kind of feeling like I just want to get rid of it here. I've been listening to your program for about a year and listening to the idea of maybe picking up a long-term care policy that is more for, you know, something that, you know, delays paying out for a couple of years and then continues to pay over the course of the rest of your life type of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
so is this
my question
a,
is, should I,
is this a disability policy or a long-term care policy?
No, no, it's a long-term care. I have disability right now. I'm 46, so
you're 46.
You know, currently, you know, disability would cover all that. And but you know, I'm 46,
why are you at 46? You bought this when you're 36. Why at age 36 were you concerned about long-term care insurance?
Probably not so concerned about it, but I was just surrounded by a bunch of other of my anesthesia partners there that were like, hey man, this is a great policy. You should buy into this.
Is it a life insurance policy?
It is through Copic Insurance Company. It's not life insurance. It's a long-term care. It's one that actually pays out, you know, basically, you know, 365 days, and that's it. And
so it's short-term care.
Today's prices.
That's short-term care.
How much are you paying on this thing?
So basically, I pay $191 every quarter, and I have 14 more years of pay on this. So about $10,700 more for basically $65,000 of benefit.
And well, it might make sense to keep it if these are some guarantees.
Is there a guarantee in it? Is it a guaranteed pay regardless?
Most of long-term care haven't been guaranteed. That's why the premiums
you know, it's on. A guaranteed pay regardless, though, but it's only for myself, and I have a wife and. You know, doesn't cover her at all.
Yeah, but if you're talking about what you paid in the past it's kind of irrelevant at this point, right? That's money's sunk.
Right.
So the question I look at now, what's the investment today going forward and what's the payout? And if you're telling me for $10,000, you can have long-term care that's going to provide $65,000 without any really waiting period. I would say don't get rid of that. That's worth it's worth $10,000 investment, even at 46 years old.
As long as it's a guaranteed pay. So does it have to be tied to you actually going into a long-term care facility?
Yeah, what's it? Or can you have home care?
Or can they just pay you out?
Either one. You know, so at home, like for home health.
Yeah, I'd keep it at this point.
We don't.
I don't know enough about the policy.
I disagree, Scott, because we don't know enough about the policy.
I don't know enough about the policy.
That's the issue is here's what we'll do. Jasmine, can you give him off the air? Can we give him
just take his information. We'll
take
follow
his information.
I'm curious about this.
And we'll have you send.
It's for an educational thing for us.
Yeah. We'll have you send over the contract and the terms of it. And then we'll form an opinion. But we don't know enough. We don't know enough to. To help
so
you
I guess
there.
A follow-up question would be, should I actually consider buying another policy that basically would cover me for above and beyond? Like, you know, basically if I end up needing more long-term care.
Do you have children at home?
Say 10 years. I do. I've got three. You know, youngest is seven.
So I would possibly look at, you're 46. I would worry more about how much disability insurance you had than I
life
would long-term
insurance.
I'm covered.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm covered for disability. I've got like six, you know, basically, again, I make about $400,000 a year. And I, you know, basically have disability to cover me for about $16,000 a month here. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, part of my thought when you said your anesthesia, I was 46 years old, I'm thinking, well, if you do a good enough job saving and don't spend like a lot of physicians do, but do a good job saving, you're going to end up with a net worth that's going to be large enough to fund any care you might need.
Yeah. So I guess the question is how much, you know, my goal is, you know, I'm one of these people that's charitable. You know, I like to give, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, making sure they have like, say, 12 times my income saved, you know, and not more than that. And right now I'm at $3 million. I'm hoping to have about $5 million. And, you know, above and beyond that, I think is just kind of hoarding at this point. So if I had that much saved up, would I even need a policy?
That's correct. That is correct.
That's how
I would not be worried about long-term
care. If you had $5 million, let's say you earned 6% a year.
It's $300,000. Right.
That's going to cover your care.
Assuming the kids actually get out of the house at some point in time.
I mean, insurance is for you. You know, I don't think Bill Gates has long-term care insurance. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Right. So obviously that's an extreme.
I don't have long-term care insurance.
I don't have long-term care insurance.
right?
Yeah,
so there,
yeah,
you'll most likely self-fund the long-term care insurance. And I assume you have a multi-million dollar life insurance policy, some term life insurance policy on yourself.
Yes.
He also has $3 million bucks in savings at this point, too. You've done a great job saving, by the way.
How old are the kids?
14, 11, and 7, all boys.
Yeah, you've been a great saver.
Yeah.
You have been
You have no idea. So just because you're, you know, just because you make a high income. I remember we had a case years ago. Two physicians came in. I forget what their specialty was. The combined income was $700,000. They came in because they had their entire savings was about $100,000 in an IRA. They came in to try to figure out how they can get that $100,000 out without any taxes and penalties so they could use it to travel. Right? So that's an extreme, right? So just because you have a good income, you probably had some school debt to pay off back in the day and all those other things. And so you should feel really good about what you read. And given your situation, if I were in your situation, I would not buy long-term care.
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay.
I would look at the portfolio.
So basically,
we're going to put you on hold and we're going to get information on your policy because it might make sense for you to invest 10 grand for 65 grand for about a 50% chance of needing it.
Yeah.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. So we're on hold and Jasmine's going to talk to you.
And I don't recall ever seeing something like that.
No, I don't either. That's what's interesting to me.
Yeah.
With a short payout.
Well, what we may find is that if you've got some sort of guarantees in there that make sure, because it was issued 10 years ago when interest rates were higher, that it might make sense keeping it.
Right. Even
you wouldn't buy it today.
Even some of these old whole life insurance policies make sense keeping. Yeah. Some old universal life. There's a lot of negative stuff, but some of the old policies are
good. Wouldn't buy it today, but if you've already bought it, that's a sunk cost.
But there actually is a couple policies out that combine life insurance with long-term care.
That you would buy today.
That are kind of interesting because it's a way,
it's a funds, a life insurance policy. At the same time, if you don't use it, it refunds your deposits. And what you're giving up there, I've looked at a couple of them, is opportunity cost of the investment return.
Which essentially pays the premium.
Yeah.
With pre-tax dollars.
The danger in us talking about this on the air is that there's so much garbage out there. There's so much garbage out there. I spoke at a conference last week of investment advisors, and I was telling them how we do this retiree beware workshop for clients and people that are interested. It's called Retiree Beware. And someone raised their hand and said, well, what products do you tell people to beware of? And I said, some of you guys aren't going to like this because the whole...
This conference was not just registered investment advisors,
It was a financial advisor. It was all kinds of people in our industry. And there were wholesalers there, manufacturers of annuity products, index annuity products that were in the exhibition hall.
Wow.
So I said, you're not going to like this, but what we warn against is index annuities and life insurance disguised as investments. And someone said, well, why? And I said, well, because... Although there is a small minority of index annuities that are actually okay.
And where the need could be there.
Correct. There's so much bad stuff in the marketplace and the average consumer can't tell the difference.
That's right.
We just say stay away from all of it.
Most people who sell equity index life insurance policies are not as licensed to operate to be in the securities business.
Correct.
They're not registered investment advisors. They're not licensed securities brokers.
They're salespeople
of an insurance product.
Yeah.
So they haven't had the education
To determine whether it's a good fit or not. That's a good point.
Yeah, Pat and I both started working at an insurance company right out of college.
We didn't stay very long.
Because we both kind of knew early on when whatever the financial need was. Life insurance was the answer. It didn't matter what it was. Life insurance was the answer for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you talk to someone who's been with a life insurance company for 20, 30 years, and they'll try to argue with me on things. Yeah, but Scott, have you seen the... And I think when that's your whole world, that's all you know?
Then that's the answer. If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And if your answer to... If all you have is life insurance to sell... Then it's going to be the solution. Yeah. We didn't last long at that company, Scott and I. That's where we met. No, so we're working together.
And by the way, thank you for speaking at that conference because we were supposed to both be there. And
I actually called Scott and said, you don't need to come.
Sometimes you get invited to speak to somebody, you don't know what it's at. It was in my least favorite city, Las Vegas. It's not where I like
it. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But, you know, the nice thing about Las Vegas is I was able to spend $7 on a nice tea.
Hey, you got that going for you.
In a fancy hotel that smelled like cigarette smoke.
Hey. It's a reminder of your childhood.
It really did.
Got to start thinking about the home living room.
Oh, my.
We better go back to calls here. This market is making me a little nervous.
It's interesting.
Now, but before we say that, we don't believe we can predict when the market's at a peak and when it's going to hit another valley, that sort of thing. But there are certain things you kind of look at and scratch your heads.
I think, and how is this happening? We've been in this industry. We've seen this before.
Yeah, because we've been in this industry a long time. Again, I started in the industry in 1990. I think you were in 1989, Pat, if I remember. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the late 2000s, there are a lot of these companies that were going public that didn't have any earnings. Some had very little revenue.
Well, in 99, too.
That's what I said. What did I say?
You said late 2000s.
Oh, no, late 90s.
Yeah. But the there was 90s. Some, there were a lot in the.
Yeah, but the late.
But in the late 90s, 97, 98, 99.
And there was particularly some of these growth stocks that kept going higher and higher. And companies would go public, these growth companies, stocks would shoot to the stratosphere. And I remember at the time we'd be like, wow, some of the stuff just doesn't make any sense. Yes. How long this going to last?
Some of the business models didn't make any sense.
And
but remember, you can raise money. A company can raise money without a business model making sense or without ever actually earning a dime of income.
That's right. If someone believes
that they will at some point in time, or they believe this, that the stock price will go higher just because someone will pay more for it.
Yes. Right? So right. Typically when someone buys a, let's say you want to buy into a company, whether it's the local gas station or a franchise or a publicly traded company.
You are buying the company and its potential earnings, or you're buying that company with the hope that you can sell your shares in that company to someone else for a higher price.
Yeah.
And you don't care about the earnings.
And maybe it's this local gas station we mentioned. Maybe you think, you know, this corner's worth a lot more than it is. So we're going to buy it. Even though the gas station's moving money, we're going to buy it and we're going to turn around and flip it to somebody else.
So but let's get back to the IPO market.
That's a very risky strategy for investing. That's speculating.
So why we're talking about this is because the IPO, initial public offering marketplace.
Here's what's interesting. This year, for the first three quarters of 2018, more than 80% of the U.S. listed IPOs, initial public offerings, have lost money the preceding 12 months.
That means the companies themselves have lost money, yet they were able to sell their shares in an open market, 80% of them.
Now, there's a professor, Jay Ritter, from University of Florida, a finance professor, that has compiled some records on this. According to his research, this is the highest proportion on record since the data he's got going back to 1980.
Which is higher than
1990.
In the late 90s.
1999.
Which was the dot-com bomb.
So these money-losing companies, they've gone public. And on average, the stock price has increased 36% since they went public through whatever date, the end of September. September 29th.
Right. 36%. And that's...
And there's some big ones like SurveyMonkey went public. They lost $24 million in 2017. I mean,
although we like SurveyMonkey, we use it here in internal, but it doesn't mean it's a good business model.
That's
correct. What was interesting
and is it might like, make money at some point.
Like these food delivery models like Blue Apron and this other stuff.
Yeah, those haven't.
But that stuff, the business models didn't make sense to me. Because I'm pretty sure they sell food at the store and that the stores would co-opt that packaging pretty quickly and make it more consumer friendly, which they have.
And probably cheaper than having to have it shipped with.
Correct. And people are still.
Dry ice or however they keep things cold.
As hard as you want to not go to the store, a grocery store, most people end up having to go to a grocery store.
But here's the thing. I think from an investor standpoint, you need to be very careful in this market. And with your portfolio, you need to be very careful you're not overweighted in growth companies that have little earnings. Look, if you have a company that's making a ton of money, the company is already very profitable, has got a great business model, even if the stock market goes through a slump again, like it will in the future, you should fare fine because Scott, the company you've got is proven.
Can you explain the difference between growth and value? Because you talked about a growth stock versus when people think growth, you think everyone wants their portfolio to grow. Explain the difference between growth and value.
Well, these tend to be companies that have higher than average growth.
Growth stocks do.
Yes. Of their revenues.
Their revenues, top line.
Growth of their revenues. And sometimes I think, frankly, it's just companies that don't have as much earnings that investors keep bidding up. And so they fall into the growth.
So they have a tendency to have a higher price to one of the indicators is a higher price to earnings
ratio. Or price
ratio.
To no earnings, like we're seeing here.
Okay.
And a value company
is what?
A company that's tend to have good earnings, has been around. Their growth prospects may not be as great going forward.
But they have consistent cash ability to make.
Like a Procter & Gamble or a Chevron, company that's been around a long time. Not to say that you should go out and buy those stocks. That's not what we're saying. But
you should not overweight your portfolio too far in one direction or the other. And you most certainly shouldn't overweight your portfolio too much equities.
The last time we saw, in 1999, when we had seen things similar, when the downturn came, the S&P 500 fell by 45%, but it was much, much worse for growth and not nearly as bad for value. Let's take a call here. 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, and we're talking with Gary. Gary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, glad to be here taking your call.
I got a question regarding the fiduciary aspect of the financial planner. I got a cold call last week from some guy from a company I never even heard of, wanted to come out and talk to me about my finances and all that. And one of the first questions I asked him is, are you a fiduciary? And his response was, I could be. And okay. I've been listening to you guys for a long time. That seemed a little one-off. And I said, that should be a binary response. That should be a yes.
That's
or
a good.
No.
Oh, you see, bring a good question, Gary. So, first of all, someone calls you and they want to come out to visit your house. You know, it's funny. So, as much as we would love at Hanson McLean to offer our clients in-home visits to make their life easier, we have never done that unless someone's on hospice or something. We do those sort of things. By and large, we meet with clients in the office in normal business hours because our advisors all have lives as well, like everyone else does. And I remember I was at, this is a number of years ago, a woman approached me and she wanted us to come to their house. She said, well, my husband's a surgeon and he's really busy. And I said, let me ask you a question. Does your husband do a house? Does he go visit people in the evenings to talk about what their surgery might be? She said, well, no, of course not. He's a surgeon. I said, well, okay. I mean, if you want a great financial advisor,
they're not
probably
gonna come
not
to your
the guy
house.
Who's going to come to your house at any time that's convenient for you. Right.
So, and I think Gary kind of caught that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question of about fiduciary, which is I could be, can't that might have some validity.
Yes. And here's where it goes. So first of all, someone who's a certified financial planner, okay, a CFP, when they become a CFP, they agree to a series of ethics within the CFP, the CFP board, that states that while doing financial planning, they will be a fiduciary. It's just during the time of them being during the financial planning. So someone could be a certified financial planner who also sells insurance. And while they're doing the financial planning, they're a fiduciary. And then when they go to sell you some insurance product or whatever they want to sell you, Fuller Brush, who knows, if they're doing door to door. They're not a fiduciary during that time.
Or there are firms that are RIAs, registered investment advisors, that also have a broker dealer that is one is fiduciary, the other is non-fiduciary.
This morning, it's funny you bring this up because I heard an ad for a firm. I think it was on public radio, so it's just one of those little quick things. And they said, I'm not going to mention the name of the firm, but they said, put in our client's interest first for five generations or whatever it was, a long time, right? And I thought, you know, it's interesting because this firm, they have two primary kinds of clients. One are investment clients, clients like Gary, right? Investment clients. The other are the companies that they raise capital for. So they'll help companies sell their own bonds, sell their stocks. Those two are totally conflicted. So if they might be putting their customers' interest first, the customer of the big corporation, they're selling their bonds, and then they go right to their retail investors.
They could be conflicted. They're not always conflicted, but they could be conflicted.
Yes. And right. And doing so, not acting as a fiduciary.
So Gary, so that's the answer to the fiduciary. In fact, Hanson McLean, right, we are a fiduciary, RIA, but we own a very, 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 very small kind of a dormant broker-dealer, which is considered non-fiduciary, that has more to do with the business operations than the products and services we deliver.
But all of our advisors always act in a fiduciary.
Always.
100%.
Always.
No one sells any. We don't sell products. We don't sell any products.
I asked them about the product thing. Do you sell your own products? Do you generate your own products? You know, I do my best to channel you guys.
Or receive a commission. Right there, you're not acting as a fiduciary if you receive a commission.
So did he come to your house?
That's a great question. No, it was actually a cold call at work, and he was going to meet at the cafe. And I took the appointments like 2 weeks or something just to see
what happens.
I'm not going to do anything.
You'll learn something.
Time.
Yeah,
exactly.
Something.
I figured worst case.
Yeah.
So it was worth the check.
Well, be careful. So I have a good friend of mine bought an expensive vacuum cleaner from a salesman that showed up in his house. He said the guy showed up in a Rolls Royce. This is like back in the late 70s.
What?
The guy showed up in a Rolls Royce, and I said, Tom, you should have never let that man in your house. Any salesman is that good driving a Rolls Royce? Watch out.
So, there's nothing going to happen. I have no plans on doing business with him at all. It's going to be interesting to see how this kind of falls out, because I'm going to ask him these questions again. We'll see how it goes. So thanks for the information. That's
all right.
All right,
Gary.
I really
appreciate the call.
That.
Glad you called. Thanks. Well, that is all the time we have in today's program. If you haven't been to Hanson McLean in a while, go to Hanson McLean. We've got a great article right there on our blog on your 2019 taxes, 4 things to do right now. So it's one of our articles that's been, our readers tend to like it, so we thought we'd bring it up. That's again at HansonMcLean.com. We're out of time. If you can get a podcast of this program, right at HansonMcLean.com, or we'll see you here next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.